And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
I guess that's it, Malcolm.
That's
okay.
It.
We're over. We're finished. No, I'm only kidding. This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. And
heard
with
on.
Me, pardon?
Heard on.
Heard on.
The View from Over Here, but on Malcolm Digital
Malcolm
Radio.
Digital Radio.
That's where we get paid from, so we better.
Well, anyway, with me is not only Malcolm, my producer, but we have a very interesting guest with us today.
Not if it keeps the cell phone on.
No, I'd never do that. I'll get that out of
there. If his cell phone goes on, we'll throw him out.
In fact, I got to turn mine off.
Good idea, Malcolm. I left mine in the car to avoid any beeping or bleeping. Anyway, his name is Ford Austin.
But what's his real name?
Ford Austin, that's it. I was born, that's what I've been called.
I tried to Google you when I first found out.
What'd you find out?
I found out that there are a lot of Ford dealers in Austin.
Yeah, certainly. Truck in Austin, Texas.
In fact, I have to tell you something. One time I tried to look up his agent, Joe Williamson, and there are 268 Joe Williamsons in the entertainment business. How about that?
Gosh, it's almost, yeah. Why not?
Anyway, as I was saying, Ford has a very interesting career. He started as an actor, started out as an actor, and that segued into different aspects of the entertainment industry. So he's been a writer, a director, a producer, and that's four hats. But he corrected me before the show started. He wears more than four hats, so why don't you share them with us?
Yeah, thanks, Stan. I kind of do it all because in this business, if you want to get things done, you really do have to kind of get in there and get dirty with it and do it yourself. It's like anything. If you're going to tell somebody what to do, you got to know how to do it yourself first.
Exactly.
So that's how that started.
It reminds me of the story of Michael Landon, an old story. Who's on Bonanza. And he said that was one of his first jobs. And they asked him, could you ride a horse? And he said, of course I can. Of course, he never was on a horse before.
That's a classic actor story. Can you ride a horse? Yeah, sure.
Of course,
and then you get out there and you get bucked off. Same thing with motorcycles and swimming. If you're from New York, you don't know how to swim.
Have you ever rode a motorcycle?
A lot of people. I have. I actually had to get a motorcycle license for the show Sons of Anarchy 2 years ago. And
do you still ride?
No, I don't, and I'd be terrified to get back on the thing.
I rode a bike for 25 years.
What bike?
It was, I had different ones, but the last one was a BMW R/60.
Oh, you don't care.
And that was, back in those days, that was considered a bad motorcycle.
Badass motorcycle.
Is that the vintage bike? No. Or is that the one that they did for the James Bond movie
in the 1990s? No. This is a regular production model. But in New York City, many times if I'm parking or whatever, if black guys would walk by, they would say, oh, man, that is one bad motorcycle. I didn't get that kind of response from white guys, only black guys.
Yeah, I think white guys go for the Harleys probably.
Yeah.
And you're in the wrong neighborhood.
And a Harley... If you ever tried to ride a Harley, it's not easy because it's pretty big. And when you take your test...
It's like trying to drive an SUV in the city.
Thank you. At least I had to do like a figure eight within the width of a normal street.
Screw that.
Yeah, but I want to know one thing. When I've never rode a bike. I rode in the back of a bike. And you get vibrations.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you rode bitch on the bike.
Yeah.
Did you get excited
from
the vibrations?
Yeah, you get an erection.
I mean, that's it.
And then the driver of the bike gets very uncomfortable.
Oh,
the whole situation.
Driver doesn't get erections? He's under the gas tank?
I don't know. It's like if you're driving a car, you don't get car sick. Oh. But if you're riding passengers, sometimes you do.
Because I was just wondering.
I would get an erection if I had a female rider holding on in back of me.
And I have an erection right now.
And she was getting one.
Ford, come on. Yeah. This is a family show.
It is a family show. Yes. Well, I'm glad to be on it. And like I was telling you guys earlier, almost all my family lives out in Brooklyn now. Isn't that a change of the world?
Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn? Where from Brooklyn?
We got family out there in Williamsburg. My sister-in-law, who's a wonderful sculptor, lives in Williamsburg.
That's a whole new world there.
It is. Like back when I used to live out in East Village in the 90s, you wouldn't really go to Brooklyn.
You wouldn't go when I lived in the Village in the 70s, in the West Village, you wouldn't go to the East Village either.
You wouldn't even go to the East Village.
Except if you wanted to score some drugs.
Yeah. And
I'm a little older than you guys, and I remember back when you couldn't even give the property away in Williamsburg.
That's right.
It almost looked like
full townhouses going for like 10 grand, 20 grand.
And a lot of destruction, torn buildings, whatever, graffiti all over. It reminded me of photographs of London during World War II.
The Blitzkrieg, yeah.
What's your favorite movie that was set in Brooklyn? Do you guys have one?
Oh, wow.
I know, I got a couple.
There's an old movie, which is not my favorite movie, but I like the scenery. It's about, probably it's a movie from the 60s, even maybe the 50s, a very low-budget movie about this kid from Brooklyn and his parents leave to do something, and his older brother is babysitting him.
You don't remember the title?
No. And he runs away from home. And where does he run? He runs to Coney Island.
Oh,
and it's a different scenes of
was the cyclone up back then?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Cyclone's been around
since
for a long time.
It's been there before.
The Wonder Wheel.
Even.
The Wonder Wheel. The big things were the cyclone, the Wonder Wheel, and the parachute jump.
Which is not active. Hasn't been for years.
The Wonder Wheel is.
The Wonder Wheel. There's one of the coasters. There's a coaster now that was in the water after Hurricane Sandy.
Now that's after
my
time.
Did you ever go on the parachute jump?
I chickened out.
I did
once.
Must say. I did it once. And the damn thing got stuck as we're coming there.
It's a good
and
thing
it was starting to
out.
Get cold. I was freezing my ass off. Well, and then finally it continued.
I'm a product of a Jewish mother. And anything that you could get hurt, you shouldn't do. Everything is fraught with danger. In fact, I tell my kids now, I said, if I ever say you shouldn't do it, because it's dangerous or what, say, stop being Grandma Lee. Because I know I have a tendency.
I'm a product of a WASPy mother, but I was raised part-time by a Jewish mother. So I don't get the benefit of being Jewish. I'm half Jewish, Jewish.
You get to see both worlds.
But I get the guilt. I get all the holidays. Like the first time I ever had a Passover, this was with my in-laws. The first time I had my Passover.
And you're still waiting to eat.
Well, I was waiting so long to eat that by the time we got to the gefilte fish, I thought that was the meal. So I sat down and I ate all the gefilte fish I could. And then the horaces came, and then the soup came, and then something else, and all this stuff.
Did you ever go to a Russian wedding?
Same thing?
Worse.
More. They fill you with all kinds of food. You don't get
vodka, right?
Yeah. And you don't get your main dish, whatever you ordered, could be chicken Kiev
like
or
an hour later?
After 12 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
They never serve the main meal before 12 and sometimes later.
Well, if you ever want a lot to eat and it starts and it's late, is a Persian bar mitzvah.
A Persian bar mitzvah?
Really?
Bar mitzvah.
I've never been to one.
I got to get my friend and business partner, Vita Ghaffari, to take me to one of those.
Oh, definitely.
Well, when you say Persian, don't you mean an Irani bar mitzvah?
It depends. Okay. It's funny because most of the... Iranian people who are Jewish call themselves Persians.
Right.
For some reason. In fact, even Persians, even Iranians who aren't Jewish call themselves Persians because they don't like the association right now politically.
And they don't want to be, connected with the powers that run the country.
You know, I'm sitting here still thinking about this movie that you just told us about.
Okay,
in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I would love to find
Malcolm,
out what that is.
You know what the best movie about Brooklyn will be?
The one we're doing.
The one that... Yeah, they make
the
our
movie
book.
That you guys are
and his book.
You guys are going to put me in. That'll be great when we make that together.
We got three movies for you, so that's we're doing a movie now.
He could fit in. Yeah,
he's fantastic.
He could be any one of a number of the characters.
Yeah, he also could be the good captain.
This is fantastic.
Captain Fitch.
You're right. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
You know, to date, I think probably some of my favorite movies. Well, first of all, there's like all these wonderful 70s gang movies.
Well, you got Saturday Night Fever.
You got Saturday Night Fever. That's
that's
iconic.
Because that's my
neighbor. That sort of does it.
You know,
that was
from
Bensonhurst.
Talk about like the Warriors
Malcolm,
film.
The critics weren't crazy about it, but it did very
Saturday
well.
Night,
the people liked it.
Well, the music was there.
The music was unbelievable.
And him walking down, I think, I forget, 86th Street, I think it was.
Yeah.
When he's working in the paint store.
Yeah, with the paint cans.
Right, and at the opening and...
And they give him a 50-cent raise per hour, and he was thrilled.
Made my hair. Don't touch my hair. Yeah.
The hair.
He hit my hair.
Well, who's doing a one-man show? This guy, Paul Dooley. I don't know if you know him.
I don't know Paul.
He always played the father. He played the father in 16 Candles for Molly Ringwald. He played he played the father in one of my favorite pictures, the one where the kid...
Teen Wolf?
No. what the hell is the name of it? It's about high school in, I think, the Midwest, and the kid pretends to be an Italian bike rider.
I saw that movie. It was cute.
I liked it. And Paul Dooley was the... See, at my age, you forget
names. I don't
know.
See that. Are you having early signs of Alzheimer's?
I don't know if it's early.
He was pretending to be an Italian bike rider?
Yeah.
So he could be with the girl?
Yeah. He was a high school kid in the local school. They were called cutters. Something with the... They worked in
there. It was a derogatory term.
The college kids didn't like the town kids. Because the town kids were peasants, so to speak.
Sounds like it's around the time Kevin Bacon was making.
No, it wasn't Kevin Bacon who was it? I'll think of it before.
He wasn't
I'll give you a call.
In it, but
who?
Kevin Bacon.
No.
But that was a cute movie. The way that kid put on that Italian accent to impress
the girls. And he became a biker. And at the end, there's a bike race. Between the Italians were coming into town.
And
for
guess
Christmas.
Who won the bike race?
Oh, the kid. The kid won the bike race.
Except they kept on kicking. The Italian riders were dirty. They kept on putting something in the spokes.
Hey, whatever it takes to win.
Anyway,
that's right.
So
that's
you're
right.
Like, when did you decide that you wanted to be? Were you raised in Brooklyn or were you raised in Texas?
No. I was raised in Oklahoma and Texas. I was born in Oklahoma City, raised in Texas, in Houston and Dallas.
You got rid of that accent.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. So I went to school in Philadelphia.
So you're a part-time cowboy.
Well, yeah. I'm in the Cowboy Hall of Fame. They put a statue in there of me.
All right.
It was a happenstance. That was something where they did the casting in Brooklyn. I went out to Brooklyn, and they did the statue in Brooklyn, and they shipped it out.
That's when you were living in Brooklyn.
That was when I was
on your bio, Manhattan. You said you're related Steve Austin?
Stephen F. Austin. Yeah, he's one of my relatives.
Ah.
And he was the guy who – actually, his father – was a big lead pioneer. There's a period of the industrial age actually called the Moses Austin period, which is why my wife thinks I'm actually Jewish, because his name was Moses. So Moses Austin, he was a big lead pioneer in Virginia, and he went to Texas and negotiated with the Spaniards to set up an Anglo-American settlement, and then had to go back home for something, and he got sick and he wound up dying. But on his deathbed, he told his son, Stephen F. Austin, I really need you to go out and take care of this and do this, and this is my life's work. This is the most important thing I've ever done.
So you're telling me that you're a very wealthy man from your father's side?
I'm telling you that I'm just here to talk.
Just hanging out. Well, Malcolm, his IMDb is very extensive. He may not be the biggest of stars, but I can tell you, he works all the time.
I try to, yeah. The thing is, I just don't turn things down very easily. Maybe I should be a little more...
No, you'll make more money that way, and you'll get noticed by other producers or whatever. Hey, that guy did a good job. Maybe I could use him over here.
You know what? That's something that just happened to me this past summer. I was actually in Oklahoma City, and there's a man there named Gray Fredrickson who produced The Godfather and Apocalypse Now.
A couple of things.
So he had let me know, we're friends, he had let me know that Francis Ford Coppola was going to be shooting a movie in Oklahoma City, a test, this past summer. So I went out there and I got them to bring me on the film and I started producing it with them, and then I shot part of the documentary about the process. And then I was sort of hanging out with Francis, and he would pull me aside and go, let me show you how I did this when I was in my 20s. And he'd direct the whole scene and then go, did you get that? And I'd say, yeah, I got it. And
so you're learning from the best.
But it was like an accident that it all happened.
You know, when he first started out, he was known as Francis Ford.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't be too ethnic back
then. When he met me, he goes, you know, my name is Ford, too. Well, but you probably already know that.
You're related.
Yeah. But this movie was pretty great because it was a live cinema event. We shot it with 30 cameras on a soundstage.
30 cameras?
And we streamed it live in
movie
theaters.
All kinds of angles.
Yeah, yeah. And we streamed it live in movie theaters as we shot it. As we shot it. It was going out live. Yeah, into a theater in Paris. Mm-hmm. Paramount Studios.
Were people allowed to edit it or you know, as it was
he
on?
He was sitting in a trailer cutting it on the fly as we shot it.
Hmm. Yeah, they were doing some experimental theater in the village.
They always
now,
were.
Years ago.
They always were.
Yeah,
yeah, like long
80s,
ago.
Like La Mama. And
where you could, the audience.
People like Elizabeth Swedos, remember
yeah,
her?
Yeah, the audience could pick the scenes they want.
Yeah, yeah, like environmental theater.
Yeah, and the thing was, like, you could go to the theater, right? And then it would come to a crossroads. And the guy could either go left or right.
Right. Like, your own adventure theater.
Yeah, it was up to the audience to decide which one he would do.
Did you guys ever do any theater when you were back in New York? I did. I did a lot of theater.
I studied.
Yeah? Where'd you study?
HB Studios, Herbert Bergdorf.
Same here, 210 Bank Street.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all used to go down there.
I'll tell you this. I've been an actor all my life.
Yes.
Because... A, I'm married. You got to be an actor for that, okay?
Marilyn, do you hear that?
Yeah. Lori, I love you so much.
She's in Las Vegas. She doesn't care.
I'm not an actor. I'm sincere.
And also, I was in consulting. And what do consultants do primarily? They're acting out whatever the hell it is.
Some people call them lawyers.
Okay.
I was in an elevator once in New York City, and there was this Hasidic guy, a rabbi who got on. Sat with me on the elevator for a while until we got to his floor, and then he stepped out of the elevator, turned around, and said, "So you're an actor. You're an actor, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" He goes, "I just could tell. You know, all actors are liars. All of them." And I said, "Oh, wait, thank you. Shabbat shalom. I'll see you later."
I thought you were going to say he was an undercover cop.
Oh, well, that would have been a good one, too. Has there ever been a movie with an undercover cop dressed as a rabbi?
Yeah, there have been several of them.
There have been stories written like that.
There was a movie called Hebrew Hammer. Did you ever see
Hebrew
that one?
Hebrew Hammer.
Never heard of it.
Came out at Sundance.
Fred Williamson, no.
No. This one was about a Jewish exploitation film about a Jewish cop with star David. And it was like those movies of the 70s, except... It was Adam Goldberg, and it was hardcore
Jewish.
Adam Goldberg,
so recently.
Yeah, it was in 2001.
One of the best pictures that were ever made about Jewish family life was the one, I don't remember the name. It took place, a good deal of it, in the Williamsburg section.
Huge population.
The hell starred in
The
it?
Chosen.
That girl.
Robbie Benson.
No.
That was a good movie.
Not that's something else. The girl was, she played a female detective with the NYPD, and she had to solve a particular crime. And one of the guys that committed the crime, when you actually see it, they rob a jewelry store, is the guy who just recently died, the one who played on the Sopranos.
Quick. James Gandolfini.
Yeah, he played a small part in it.
He
didn't do really well until after, when people noticed him. So that's what you wanted.
Yeah, True
for
Romance
you.
Was his breakout. I need a True Romance breakout.
People to notice you.
Well, now it was good.
Well, this is where it starts, right here, between the three of us.
Oh, well, the internet.
Then you will invite us to your next premiere.
Yeah. Because it'll be in your movies.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The internet.
Hopefully I have one sooner than that, but yeah.
The podcasting is the way to go. Because
you really like that?
No. Oh, definitely. Because number one, the podcasting, here you can see us.
Exactly.
It's not like necessarily all radio. You can have, it's radio with pictures.
It's more interactive.
Yeah. Number two, people don't have to be here at a certain time.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to watch a show,
it's
on 8 o'clock at night. You have
to
be there.
It's on when you want it to be on.
And all our shows are on our website. So you go to Malcolm Digital Radio, The View from Over Here. They could see that your show starting next week. They could see it another, you know, if you say 2 months from now, if you want, hey, I was on this. They can go to see it.
And we do one other thing for you.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, within the next week or two, depending on the backlog of stuff, I do a write-up of the interview.
Oh, fantastic.
Explaining you, and we do an email, I guess you call it an email blast.
Yeah, okay. You blast it out. Yeah.
And we send it to approximately 15,000 people.
15,000, 20,000.
And then we send you a copy, and you could send it to whoever you like, your mother or your whoever.
Well, that's where Joe does a good job in
send it,
promoting.
I'll, you send it to me, I'll forward it to my mom.
Yeah.
I want to keep you guys away from my mom. I don't want any crazy stuff.
The Jewish one?
Yeah.
And when I put it together, I always send it to your agent, in this case, Joe.
Good.
And I say, look it over for accuracies, if I got all of the critical points. Yeah. So sometimes he'll say, go with it as it is, or he'll make a couple of suggestions.
You know, I like that stuff because right now I'm getting ready to launch this new show on Facebook, Facebook Live with Ford and Vita. We just went through all this processing of paperwork with the union, and that's a live show. So what happens is it'll air live, and then people will be able to find it on demand, even though it's been shot live. If you do a live thing on television... The thing I did with Francis Ford Coppola last summer, you can't find that anywhere.
Yeah, Aaron, that's what we need. That's what was Facebook Live, because I want to do that directly to this show.
Well, there's only one
problem. It's very easy. All it takes is your
cell
phone.
There's a problem with it going out live immediately. If you fuck up,
You
can't undo it.
Yeah, but we don't undo it anyway.
Do you undo
it? Yeah, you're right. We never bother.
If somebody drops an F-bomb, you don't undo it?
No, I just did. Come on. In fact, we used to be at a studio before we came here.
This is a studio.
Another one. Which shall be nameless. They did not like us using any of
the
F words or whatever.
Well, that's because they rebroadcast some of the shows on regular landline radios, and you can't do
you
that
can't
on.
Do the FCC
yeah, but
levels,
I have to right? tell you. A couple of times I let one out just to see if the sound engineer was sleeping.
Well, that's why we're not there anymore.
Well, one of the reasons, anyway.
But anyway, the story you're telling me about the Jewish mother, I don't know if you heard the comedian David Steinberg.
Yes.
Who does a lot of directing now. But anyway, he comes from a very religious Jewish family. Mm-hmm. I think his father was a rabbi or a cantor. He became a comedian, of course. But anyway,
so did Jackie Mason, he was a rabbi.
Yeah.
He married a Catholic girl.
Most Steinberg. Of them do. Shiksa.
So one time he was on Johnny Carson's show and said, Johnny said, David, you married a Catholic girl from your background. How was it?
Appeal.
He said, it's the same thing. I teach her guilt. She teaches me shame.
Oh,
it's the opposite side of the coin. Thank you.
Yeah, my wife and I, we go back and forth on the guilt stuff, and I have to finally say, listen, this guilt is just going to wash off of me because I wasn't raised really
you gotta teach
hardcore
her,
with
you
it.
You got to teach her sin.
I got to teach her sin?
Sin.
Trust me, I'm teaching her sin every Friday night when I get a chance.
Well, it's teaching or practicing, which is it?
Yeah, we practice sin.
Okay.
We teach sin. We try and pass it on to others. Yeah. You never know.
Well, I find that when you get guilt, like my mother used to do that with me. And if she said, like your mother said to you, don't do that, you may get hurt, I would do it. Whatever she said don't do, I would do. Was that stupid? Was it me rebelling? I don't know. But that's how I was.
Sometimes I wish I didn't have the whole
thing. If I would get some of it now from anybody, I just let it roll off.
That's the best way. I just went back to New York. I left my wife out here working. She works at ABC.
What does she do?
She's a development producer for ABC Daytime. So she creates talk shows. Okay. She won an Emmy for creating The Doctors. She did another job.
We should talk to her and get the show on.
Yeah, so maybe she'll discover us.
Maybe she will. Maybe she will. Through this.
Through this.
But so I booked this play in New York City just in January this year. So I had to take off for 3 months to do this world premiere of a Tennessee Williams play.
Oh, okay.
I originated the role.
Which Tennessee Williams?
It's a brand new one that's never been done.
So it's
the estate brought it out of the coffers.
Okay,
and they said, he wrote this in 1982, a year before he died. We're going to get you guys this play, and you can perform it. So these people cast me in the lead role. It's called A Recluse and His Guest.
Oh, was it Broadway or off-Broadway?
It was an off-Broadway contract.
I say the name again so everybody can hear.
A Recluse and His Guest is the name of the play. And it's part of a night of one acts of Tennessee Williams.
How did you like it?
It was amazing. But I had the guilt because I had to leave my wife in California for 3 months.
And you couldn't take her, obviously, because she's working.
And then she came out for one weekend to see the play and let me know I was doing okay.
No, she came out to check. To make sure
I wasn't living in sin.
Around.
Yeah, right. So
she checked your room. That's okay.
She did.
There's no
there's no other underwear.
Nobody under the bed.
Right.
Exactly.
I used to love off-Broadway. I mean, Broadway is fine.
This is where experimental stuff happens.
But now they have off-Broadway, and they publicize it as such.
Yeah. You know the thing about Broadway, off-Broadway stuff that's great and off-Broadway? In the 70s, you had people like Raul Julia, Christopher Walken, Christopher Lloyd, all these other great actors coming up, Ethan Phillips, all these really talented, iconic actors today.
Until they were able to get into the big time.
Al Pacino.
I remember I saw Godspell in off-Broadway, and it was marvelous because the actors were walking in the audience,
which
I can't do that in Broadway. But the...
Although the Spider-Man show, Spider-Man jumped down right before my knees.
You know, I can't think
Did you hear about the Living Theater? Julian Beck?
It sounds really familiar.
Julian Beck, they were experimental theaters in the, I guess, 60s, 70s. They traveled around the world. I saw them one time at BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music. And originally a group of people go on the stage. And they look, you know, like the hippies. And the production of Hair is surrounding you. Right. And then for 10 minutes, they're just talking to each other.
I'll give you a better example.
Wait a minute.
Pre-show stuff,
And all of a sudden...
Or this is the show?
No, this is the show. The show's supposed to start at 8. They come on the stage at 8 o'clock. 8:15, 8:10, they haven't done anything except talk to each other. All of a sudden, the audience starts shouting out,
boo,
"What are you going to do? Something!
Do something!
Do something! Do something!" Then finally, one of the men or women get up. "What do you want us to do? You're the show." And they start arguing with the audience.
That's a great one.
Then all of a sudden, one of them get up.
It's like a reality show.
No, they start talking about the individual liberties that we can't do. Like, I can't go to Europe without a passport. You know, one says it, and then it sort of echoes with a group. Then towards the end, they says, "I can't walk around naked. I can't walk around."
Did he take off his clothes and walk around naked?
All of a sudden, he says, "Fuck it."
Yeah.
And all of them take off their clothes.
Good.
Oh.
And then...
All of a sudden, this play got good.
I have a follow-up to that.
Then they start walking into the audience.
Naked.
And they say, "Why are you sitting there? Why are you sitting there all dressed up? Come on, join us. Stop being afraid."
How many people did join?
About a third of it.
Oh my God.
That many? Wow.
Yeah, because they knew, I was young then, and it was all the young folk.
When you're young, you do stupid things.
Well, what's so stupid about it?
What's stupid about it?
Because someone was on the side taking pictures of you.
No, listen to this. If you're young and you've got that great body and somebody goes, "Take off your clothes," you should be naked right then.
You're right.
Everybody, if you looked at an old movie of yourself and you were like beautiful, Adonis-like, and you had it today, you'd be pulling that thing out at dinner parties, showing it to the neighbors and all your friends.
Well, you're talking about that. I remember,
Didn't Anthony Weiner do that, and he got into trouble?
Yes, he sure did.
But he didn't have an ice, but he was skinny.
All right, wait, I have one for you.
Okay, tell me.
There was a show on Broadway, back in around, I don't know, the 70s. I don't remember it, but... it was an entire show where they were naked up on stage. Bill Macy was in it before he
Treat Williams was in it, too.
Yeah, that was a famous show, and I forget the name of it now.
That was Hair. That was a production of Hair.
No, they weren't naked.
And you know what was odd? One of the actresses, one of the lead actresses, was a good friend of my sister, and she's been over to my mother's house, so I knew her and met her. But then to see her naked up on a stage, it was,
whole different light.
No, I remember I went to see Hair on Broadway, and there was that big thing about someone being naked.
Yeah.
And what the whole thing was, at the end of the first act, they're under like a big tarp, the whole group.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the tarp is lifted. They're all naked, and the lights go out. You can't see anything. But at that time, was that
a tarp or a hoopah?
I don't know.
It sounded more like it was a parachute. Type of thing.
Man. I'm trying to think of the name of the play because that was
Calcutta.
Yes, that's notorious. You know, when I was back in New York in 1998, I was doing Death of a Salesman with Ralph Waite, and there was this show that came through Broadway that was just a sensation, where you'd have a guy. They'd just be naked on stage, and they'd take their dicks, and they'd wrap it over their wrist and go, "Hey, what time is it?" Or they'd make it look like a hamburger.
Well, in this old Calcutta thing.
That's an old joke, right?
So the guys were, like, grabbing, shaking hands. They were pulling the guys. Yeah.
Well, then I have never seen Calcutta.
Well, this one was called Puppetry of the Penis. It was a show all about dudes that would get up and do origami with their penises on Broadway.
I've seen that on an HBO type of special they had of different scenes. What was I going to say now?
Trying to think about that, it was literally like they had all of the, there was maybe 100 different origami moves that these guys would do with their penis and balls, their junk, the hamburger, the Loch Ness Monster, the watch.
This was a play, right?
This was a Broadway.
So not
play.
Off or
Broadway.
Off. It was,
this was
legitimate.
A big
okay.
Helen Hayes Broadway
how
house.
How well did it do?
Sold out.
But how long?
Not as long as Hamilton, I'll tell you that.
What did the casting call say? Please, well-endowed actors?
Or just, you know, very malleable junk.
How long were you in there? Wouldn't that be improper?
10 minutes. They let me go.
You can't do that now. It would be like some kind of a whatever.
Well, not really. I don't know. They do, you know, did you guys ever see the Book of Mormon?
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
No nudity that, but very, very scandalous.
You had some really raucous... Situations or references.
They have two cable shows now. One is a Survival Naked, where they're naked and afraid. Naked and afraid. They put two people.
They got
in
another
an
one
being
like naked first dates.
Dating naked.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at him saying, "What the hell?"
You know, I'm kind of wondering. We got to the naked stuff fast.
There was a movie, Naked Prey. Played by Cornel Wilde. I think he's dead now. And he's one of a group of jungle explorers or whatever. And he gets captured by these natives. They kill his partners very gruesomely. But him, for some reason, they let him go. But they strip him down naked. And they give him about, maybe a minute to run as far and as fast as he can. And they're... They hunt him down, and it's their job
to kill him.
Yeah, they have a...
And he makes it through.
They have an old movie like with Bela Lugosi or somebody like that where he's in an island and he gives people, you know, the people that come on the island, you know, suck on the island.
He gives them a transfusion?
No. But they have the prey, like rich guys pay a certain amount to hunt human beings.
There was a movie that came out in about 2006 starring Danielle DeLuca and, who's that great Chicago actor, Joe, that owns Taste Chicago over there in Burbank, right down the street. Anyway, the movie was shot about a woman who was abducted, stripped down, and left in a field by this guy, who then... Just hunted her down.
Sounds like
this poor actress spent 80 minutes of the film.
I think I saw that on TV. Yeah. Don't remember the
name.
Naked
Fear was the
name
of it.
Okay.
Well, I love Game of Thrones because there's some great bodies.
Boy, there is.
There's some great women there. I don't know where they found them.
Wonder what the casting call says. Must have natural breasts. Yeah. Well, to be historically accurate, of course.
Well, I like the queen when she's naked. Shame. Did you see that scene?
Yeah, that was unusual. No. I never thought I would see that.
And she lives in Sherman Oaks.
That's a whole wonderful movement in TV now where they have the naked stuff.
When you have a casting call or whatever and you specify whatever particular traits you're looking for, isn't that some kind of a discrimination?
Well, yes.
Because everybody is so politically correct these days.
So give us an example of what you're talking about. So your casting call says...
You want a female with large breasts.
Large areolas or...
Whatever, okay?
Male nudity
now
must be 7 inches or better.
What about those females?
Yeah, your length discriminating me.
Yeah, so you have these...
You're a lengthist.
Right.
Yeah, whatever.
No, I don't think so, because when you're casting for acting, it's a certain... Gee, I want to play the part of a 17-year-old. Yeah, but you're 72.
You know, not inside. I'm 17
right.
Inside.
I feel
so. This person would file what kind of lawsuit?
Unfortunately, I'm
out of my mind, and I'll never work in this industry again.
That's what would happen, exactly.
Yeah. It is a big thing in this industry, though. How they can just literally – it's the only industry in the world where I can hire you because you're white.
Yeah.
Or I can hire you because you're young. Or I can hire you because you're a man.
Or you're 6 foot, or you're 6 foot two.
Any other job, if I try and hire you because you're a man, I can get prosecuted. if I can hire you because you're white,
how about
that's
transgenders?
Awful.
They could be either.
It's a major thing, yeah. And I've always wondered about that. I wonder if I should go out and just dress up and take some photographs and start pushing myself.
I guarantee you'll get more parts.
What, did you see my IMDb page?
Yeah.
You should see this picture on the IMDb page. It is just such a wonderful photograph of me as a unicorn, a manicorn.
I tell you, when you walked into the studio, I said to myself, this is not the guy.
This is not the unicorn?
No, you didn't look anything like that picture.
You can get a robe on. Orange is the new black.
And I wish I could. I'll be the new bitch.
Yeah.
You know, we saw a preview of that before it came out in, of all places, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Nashville. This was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And then it came out like a year later. And said, wow, this is a new concept. This has never been done, which reminds me of that program Banshee. Have you ever seen Banshee?
I have seen Banshee, and I'm glad you brought that up because I want to talk to you guys about Texas for a little bit.
You were in it?
No, I was not in it. But I want to see what you guys know. I have kind of a little personal quiz guys about Texas.
They bet it's all underwater now, I know.
It is underwater. People are teaching their horses to swim.
Yeah, and the cows are.
But
have you guys been to Texas
I've
before?
I've been to Texas.
Where did you go?
I went up north through Laredo while going from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Okay, so you basically took the 40
really
freeway.
Know.
You went through Amarillo.
Exactly.
And I was rear-ended on the 10. In Odessa, Texas.
Sure, yeah, all the down south, definitely, and on your way to Florida.
But, you know, Texas is bigger than a lot of countries.
You're holding on to the New York Jewish stereotype. I got to go to Florida.
The funny thing was the Texas Rangers. I was still living in New York back then.
Nolan Ryan.
And the Texas Rangers came out, right? No, well, not the ball team, but the Rangers.
Oh, the real Rangers.
And they were talking like they had cotton in their mouth.
Yeah, where the hell y'all think you're going?
It was like the cotton.
Let me see your license plates there, boy.
And I was speaking, I'm from New York, and I was excited, and I was speaking fast. Blah, blah, blah. They couldn't understand me.
I can't understand all the stuff you're talking about.
I'll give you a better example. A few years ago, Marilyn and I took a cruise, okay? Cruise of the Mediterranean. It was a great cruise, okay? We covered just about every major city. And for 10 days, we were at the same table with this couple who came from someplace in England.
Probably. Yeah.
And I didn't understand what the fuck he was talking about for 10 days. All I did was nod. Couldn't understand a word he said.
But he sold you a life insurance policy.
Exactly. And you ate 5 blood sausages on that trip.
Right.
It was a good trip, except for that.
What was the Texas quiz?
You've been to Texas. The reason I ask is because I just made this movie in Texas called Six Pack Sam. It's a very big movie that's about to come out. And I had not spent that much time in Texas since I was a kid. And I wondered, what do you guys think of Texas? What's your take on it? You've driven through it. You've driven through it. Have you ever been to Austin?
No. I think I stopped off at the...
You would have gone through probably Dallas if you were going through there.
And the only thing I know about Texas is that they'll never win with Tony Romo. For some reason...
Well, you know, there's a lot of people in Texas that would agree with you, too. When you picture Texas, what do you picture?
I picture a very, very, very large country, practically.
Right now.
And I'll tell you, when I was with the Sheriff's Department, we would get... a lot of stuff from Texas, okay? Like all of their APBs, stuff from the different departments. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, you know, this is not like another state like California. This is another country actually reporting everything that was happening.
Yeah. It's amazing. In the cities, do they wear cowboy outfits or cowboy hats?
Well, what I was going to say is Austin, Texas has really become one of the most progressive cities in the country. Hmm? All of the internet companies, Apple, Dell, Microsoft.
So they frown on a big cowboy hat.
They've all moved there. They still wear that. It's a big fashionable thing. Cowboy chic is what they call it. They don't ride horses in town.
Yeah, I can't wear cowboy boots for some reason. I cannot, my feet cannot fit into them.
You know what?
They're too tight.
Yeah.
Have you ever worn cowboy clothes? I used to get shirts. Cowboy style, which didn't have buttons.
Oh, yeah.
Snaps.
Oh, yeah, the little snap shirts. that way you could do the magic mic thing and just come right out. Well, so if you go to Austin today, you will see what's called the Silicon Prairie. and you will see what's called Troublemaker Studios and the Austin Film Festival and all of this big influx of filmmaking in Austin, Texas, up where there just used to be a vacant airstrip in North Austin. And
yeah, they've had their film thing going on for a number of years now.
Absolutely. Well, what happened was Robert Rodriguez got the deals to come out and make movies because of his movie that he did, El Mariachi. And he got a studio office at Warner Brothers. And instead of staying there, instead of working there and getting a hotel room and spending his money, he would just sleep there, save his money. And then once he did the deal for his movie, he said, you know, I don't want to stay here. I don't really like California. I want to go back to Texas and make my movies there. He set up a whole infrastructure, a whole studio system. And now it's like a way of life for so many people there.
Ford, let's get back to your movie.
The Six Pack Sam?
What is that about?
Who was in it?
Six Pack Sam stars me.
Okay.
And
We
rounded it out with all of these other new groundbreaking Austin talents. We've got Darcel Daniel, we've got Daryl Mitchell, we've got Diana Rose, and we've got this great actor Carl Anderson, who was in this other movie by the same director, Joe McReynolds.
So all of these people owe you something now.
No, I think we all. Well, wait till you see the movie.
Okay. Yeah, when is it coming out?
We're having a cast and crew screening at the Alamo Draft House, July 9th. In Austin, Texas.
I'll be in Austin.
Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Okay. You have an invitation. You can come on down. And movie's directed by Joe McReynolds, who directed The Vern a few years ago, which you guys remember. That one starred Carl Anderson, who has turned out to be the Jack Nicholson of Austin, Texas. But this movie is a wonderful.
Tell us what it's about.
It's a crime thriller where I play a retired police officer who's on pills.
Yeah, I can see.
And he's an alcoholic and I wind up getting
typecasting.
But wait a minute.
Exactly. You saw me on the way in, right?
They must have put a lot of makeup on or changed your hair to Malcolm's color because you don't look like you would be retired unless you had a disability.
I grew a full beard and I do have a disability. I wound up limping through the movie and really playing up a lot of the stuff that I dealt with through my car accident.
You were telling us about the car accident.
Yeah, you can't believe it, right?
No.
It's insane.
You were paralyzed on one side?
March 9th, 2011. I was in a car accident. So the day after your birthday, I was in a car accident.
Were you married then?
I was married then. That's the only reason I'm alive today.
I told you not to drink.
You told me not to.
At my party.
So I was driving home from work at the Highland, at the lot up Highland Boulevard, and my car spun out when I passed out. Wasn't drinking.
What did you pass out from?
I was working for 12 hours, 16 hours that day, 20 hours, all day, all day.
You're supposed to pull over to the road, the side of the
road. I pulled over into a pole.
A little nappy.
You took a nap on a pole.
So the long story short is I wound up spinning sideways into the pole and the car folded around my body.
Ooh.
Jesus.
It was a 90-mile-an-hour accident, and it was all right at my left hip. So I wound up having the same accident that James Dean had, and the same accident that Paul Walker had. It was in the same car, except my car didn't catch on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's because you didn't have enough gasoline in it.
No, because I'd driven it all out, right, speeding. Thankfully. So I wound up waking up in the windshield and saw the firefighters coming to cut me out of the car.
And you didn't know what they were coming for because you were half out
of it? I said, thank God you're here. Get me out of here. I want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And they fired up the jaws of life, and I'd made about 20 horror films by that time, and I was in shock, so I thought that this was a chainsaw. They were going to cut me in pieces and put me back together in the hospital.
Were you paralyzed immediately?
I don't know, because I was pinned in the car. I couldn't move, and I must have...
So you didn't know, really.
Did the doctors ever discover why?
Yeah, it was sacral fractures, and there's a load of nerves that are in your sacrum.
Stuff, okay.
And if those nerves get crushed, which I had a lot of crush injuries, they wind up just shutting down. So the whole left side of my body shut down. And I was bedbound for a year before I was able to actually get up and try and walk.
What about your rehab? How long did that take?
Oh, I'm still in rehab. Yeah. But I was in rehab actively every day for 2 years. And then after 2 years, I moved to about once every other day or once every 3 days. But if you want to recover from this stuff, you have to work at it every day. Because I also had a brain injury that that caused me to have to relearn how to write and read
and
do mathematics.
You don't appear too bright.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you for noticing.
Well, now you only go for casting calls that says right-sided actor only.
Yeah, we need the right actor for this.
And here it says, shoot my right side.
Yeah, we're looking for the right. Yeah, no, my good side. So
it's like the guy who says, get my good side.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I lived for a while. And
now you're okay.
Yeah, thanks to my wife. Like I said, thanks to my wife.
What part did she play?
She played.
Disencouraging?
No. She would come over the hill, go to Cedars-Sinai and do rounds with the doctors every day. Mm-hmm. Make sure I was up, and then she'd drive over the hill and go to work, and then she'd drive back over the hill at night and tuck me in, and she'd go back over the hill at night and sit with all the bills, which was $7.5 million in hospital bills over 2 years.
You weren't covered by anything?
Or? Yeah, we were. Are you kidding me?
I'm wondering.
If I wasn't covered, I'd be like trying to figure out how to like make money in this moment.
Because you're paying us a good deal of money to be on our show.
I know. I couldn't believe I actually got such a great deal with you guys. Like
such a
$25
deal.
A minute was not
such
bad.
Such a deal you never got in your life.
So the thing about my wife being the advocate is that it went beyond everything that
did she also rub your body like to, you know,
of course even before the accident. So she produced my recovery.
Does it give you a different perspective of life or did you view your, you know, what you do any
Malcolm,
differently?
You
or
see your
person?
Whole life flashing before you.
No, I'm not
you.
Talking about that. I mean, how
you know what happens.
Or do you drive slower now?
Once everything is taken, well, that's a little bit too. Yeah, I do drive slower and in a bigger car. Yeah.
What do you drive now?
I drive a big X5 SUV, BMW SUV, like your motorcycle, but it's a SUV.
Yeah.
It's a diesel, too.
Yeah. I don't ride motorcycles anymore. I'm a little
smart,
too old.
Especially not in Los
Angeles. What type of...
Well, so what happens when that happens is you wind up changing everything about yourself, how you interact with people, because I met my relatives. I had a near-death experience. I saw the light. I saw all these things.
Did you see them up above when you were...
No, they were right there with me, standing in front of me on the street.
Is this before you actually met them or before?
Well, I never met them in life.
Yeah.
They were standing outside the car.
So you saw them in your near-death experience, but you never met them...
In life.
At that point in time.
No. They died before I was born.
I was telling Stan before you came to the show that I had a friend who was flatlined for 9 minutes with a heart attack.
He's lucky to be alive. He's fully functional?
Fully functional. And he said when he was flatlined, he was like in a white room, and he saw his grandmother and dead relatives.
When I was flatlined, I was in the car on the street, and I all of a sudden was standing outside the car, and I looked back, and there was my body in the car, pinned with a firefighter cutting me out of the car.
Right, so you saw that.
And I saw my great-grandfather and his son, and then a doorway of white light, and I talked to them for a long time.
My question was, did you converse with them, or did they wave to you?
I thanked my great-grandfather. I said, thank you so much for doing everything in your life that allowed me to have a better life.
And you know something? That might be, you know, who knows?
Something
could be true.
I had a philosophical question that a friend of mine, on the same exact subject, and I suggested, you know, maybe that's not happening that way. Maybe that's the inborn shutting down procedure when your body and mind starts to shut down. Well, why would everybody have the same experience
because
if they come back?
Because it might be true. It might be happening what happens after death.
But that's always like the age-old discussion on that. Is it some sort of chemical thing that happens in your mind and it's a byproduct of your visual cortex shutting down and so it's like going into some sort of dreamlike?
Or is it real?
You know, we'll never know.
Well, hopefully we'll know one day. I had one.
Yeah, we'll find out when we find out who really killed Kennedy.
We know who killed Kennedy. We know.
But you're not going to come back and tell us, would you? I had one time an out-of-body experience.
It's a one-way street. You're right.
I was into meditation, right? And I was in
my out of body.
Fire Island.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting down meditating, and all of a sudden, my body is still. But I felt something rising from my body.
Wow.
It was me.
So you were levitating while meditating.
And I wasn't levitating because I looked down and I saw my body.
You think you saw your body.
No, I did see my body. And I was getting, like to the ceiling. And all of a sudden I said, well, what happens if my spirit goes beyond the ceiling into the sky?
Then you're gone.
You did this just through meditation?
Through meditation.
Just sitting there thinking?
Yeah, and all of a sudden I freaked out and I went right back to my body.
Of course.
It never happened again. It
Malcolm,
happened about
maybe you were dreaming.
Ago.
No,
no,
you swear,
I swear
that it really happened.
It really, really
All
happened.
Right, stick it to really your happened. Guns.
But I don't know if you've ever seen the a person when they've passed, when they've died.
Passed away. Yeah, you see they're gone.
Yeah,
what do you mean, dead body?
Yeah, no, no, you see a body and
like
they're alive.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen several people
die in front of you, right?
Yeah. What happened is we had to turn off the machine. They were just living on machines. And you know,
life support, okay.
Life support, and they were brain dead. And they couldn't function alone, and they turned off the machine, and within 10 seconds they were no life, they were dead. But I don't know whether this would be psychological, but you looked at them differently. All of a sudden there was something missing from them.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden you realize that happened to me with a friend, and you're looking at them and you realize, oh well, that's not them.
Right, it's not.
That's
there.
Not them.
They're not there anymore.
Why are we talking about death?
I don't know. Let's talk about
subject.
Life.
Death, be not proud though. Death is part of life.
Yeah, let's talk about.
Yeah, but let's talk
okay,
about.
Okay, let's talk
the
about.
Good
I've got
parts.
Two things I want to talk to you about.
Right, quickly,
I forgot.
We have five
One of
minutes.
Them is this so very Vita event that's coming up on the 29th with Vita Ghaffari.
Yeah, she was on the show.
That's going
about,
to be at the W Hollywood. Yeah. She's a wonderful person, and she's now my partner in that new Facebook Live show I was telling you about. And Facebook Live is just, it's going to turn into this great thing for us because we're going to be interviewing, hopefully you guys will come on there. And,
well, we got a speaker. Sure. I can put you on Malcolm Radio.
Yes, absolutely.
That could be your outlet where people.
We'd love that.
Just let us know when.
But don't
do it in Austin.
No, we're going to do that here in Los Angeles. In Austin, we'll do another show.
Okay.
But I do know that there's another thing that Vita asked me to mention to you guys, and I'm not sure. So
mention it.
Okay, so my stepfather was the head of the Atomic Regulatory Commission under Reagan.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
James Turtelot. And he's the man who walked into Three Mile Island and said, you've had a meltdown. And they said, oh, what are you doing? Get out of here. You're a lawyer. You don't know what you're talking about. And he said, I do know what I'm doing.
I thought that was Jack Lemmon.
No.
That was in the movie.
That was China Syndrome.
Yeah.
So he looked at this chamber and he saw the pitting in the chamber and he said, I know you've had a meltdown. But I'll leave you. And then six weeks later, they announced it in the papers that they had the meltdown. He lived are you familiar with Arlington and right outside of D.C.?
Yeah.
With the Iwo Jima Memorial. Yep. Like growing up, we used to watch the fireworks up there out the window. Boy, a lot of firework talk.
Well, yeah, I think I see more fireworks in Washington, D.C. than any other city, except maybe Las Vegas.
Well, that's at the White House where they're shooting
they shoot
all the time.
The big show. Yeah. I saw some great ones in Philadelphia once. You ever been to Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Many, many, many times.
So I did my master's at Temple University there and did a few plays out there. And
you
I got
Bill
down.
Cosby, huh?
Yeah, Bill Cosby.
Tell me if this is true. They used to say years ago, you're running a contest. Your first prize is a trip to wherever, and your second prize, is a trip to Philadelphia or something like that. And they were, making fun of Philadelphia.
This was a joke.
It wasn't very funny, but
well, that was
for some bit, people it was.
That was a line from W.C. Fields. He always hates Philadelphia.
Philadelphia and kids and dogs.
No, I think Badonis.
I don't like him.
Impersonation.
But on his tombstone.
Malcolm, he does impersonations.
But on his tombstone.
Yeah, who else you want to hear? Let me try another one. I'll just throw it out there.
Who else do you do?
Excuse me, sir. I was just wondering if, but just one more thing, sir. Is that not your dog back there? He seems to have murdered another man.
I saw that movie also.
Yeah. You know who does a great impression of Peter Falk?
Yeah, Kevin.
Kevin Spacey.
No. Well, Kevin. Hank Garrett.
Hank Garrett.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy,
Hank
I'd
Garrett
love to
does,
see
yeah.
Hank Garrett on this show.
He is. He does show. That well. Really good.
Hank Garrett's going to be out at our So Very Vita event on the 29th. Mm. You guys should come to that. But that's Vita's question.
That's Vita's question.
I'll
speak to Joe.
You guys. Yeah.
I'm sure he's working behind the scenes.
He is, absolutely. But let me ask you guys, is there anything else you guys have questions about with my stuff? I think I'm almost done here.
Yeah. What would you like to cover?
Well, I got this movie Six-Pack Sam coming up.
You have about a minute.
And I got the Facebook Live show with Ford and Vita that's launching. And gosh, I don't really know what else I've got coming up except more movies that I think I'm going to be making. I'm really getting back to directing films. Which
do you prefer, the directing or acting?
Or writing?
You go back and forth because what happens is you get so deep in this stuff that you wind up getting sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a lifetime member at the Actors Studio for about 3 years now. And it's this passionate thing where you go in every day and you do hard work. The one up on 44th Street in New York City.
Okay.
And then there's the one out here that's being run by Martin Landau and Mark Rydell. Marty is my mentor there. And so, you work really hard and you work really deep. You were at HB Studios. You work so hard. You're dragging all your props in to do some scene work and sensory classes. And you just burn out after a while. So then you go back into life.
And then
try and work on directing a movie or editing.
I've heard it said that actors generally make for excellent directors
because
they've been there.
And they know how to talk to an actor. Absolutely. That's why
insulting them.
When I was a kid, my parents put me into a casting service and they put me in a movie when I was one with Robert Lansing. Mm-hmm. And remember Robert Lansing?
Yeah.
And it was an awful movie. And and then I thought later on, I was like,
is he still alive?
I think he passed away.
When I did my little bit of acting, if you're working in theater, I like acting. If you're working in film, I don't like acting.
That's right.
Anyway,
you don't have any control over your performance.
Right, and you have no control and you don't know what's going to be on the editing floor afterwards.
The editor is really the one in control.
And you don't know what angle they shot you from. So you don't know
if you're lucky.
You don't know who you're projecting from. Anyway, it's time to say goodbye.
Time to say goodbye.
Thank you very much.
It was very nice to meet you, Amir.
It has been a pleasure.
Rock and
roll. And we will do this again.
We didn't even get to talk about all those New York baseball teams.
Right, we got to do it.
Anyway. Next time.
Aaron,
it's a wrap. The Yankees, the Mets.